and welcome to Tabletop Game Talk, On Topic, a show where we talk about tabletop gaming topics of all kinds. I'm one of your hosts, Fletcher.
I'm Kitty.
And I'm Chris.
Today we're getting your feedback on our favorite games, gaming obsessions, games versus activities, theme, and weddings? All that and some exciting announcements. Well, not as exciting as Fletcher's engagement. Okay, maybe not exciting at all, but there are announcements about upcoming changes to the show.
And we're going to save them until the very end, so you have to listen or fast forward. But first, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, George Gia, Adam Harrison, the SGC, and Thomas Accioretti. Also, a huge thank you to all of our other patrons as well. I know I want to spoil all of the announcements right now because I've just been working on some of this stuff, and I can't. I have to wait.
I know. You, like, called me out of the blue to talk about this stuff while you were driving. And you were like, hey, what are you doing? And I was like, I don't know. Nothing. Great. Listen to me talk about this for a while.
Well, phone calls are weird, though, because these days, if you make a phone call, someone thinks that someone died or something. So I just wanted to be, like, right up front. It's like, nobody's died. I'm just driving.
I was going to say, actually, almost all the phone calls I get are, I'm in the car and I'm bored. So I called you to talk to me to entertain me.
Yeah.
It's like, just listen to my podcast. It's like the same thing.
Yeah. Fletcher, do you make phone calls to anyone ever?
I try not to. And I didn't find out about the changes until I read the show notes.
You're too new.
I was like, oh, okay, we're doing this now. Cool.
Oh, we have something else that we're including you in, too. So there's a Saturday in the very near future you need to make available.
Yeah.
We'll let you know all about it.
Okay.
So, fun stuff. And maybe other people will know all about it too, but we won't know until the end of the episode. Okay. So, this episode is our feedback episode. If you are new to a feedback episode, it's basically where we gather all of the feedback from the previous, in this case, four episodes. It was supposed to be 3 to 4 episodes, and occasionally it turned into like 5 or 6 episodes, or depending. So, this is just the last 4, and we can sort of put together as much as we can from emails and our Board Game Geek feedback threads. Also, I want to thank you to, I meant to note this down. I want to say Chris.
Adrian?
Yeah, well, Christopher Anderson, right? No, who's...
What? Who's posting the feeds on BGG?
Yeah.
Is Adrian Dong.
That's what I meant to say. It's the A that confused me.
I got you, Adrian. I put together the show notes today.
Well, Christy started doing it, so thank you, Christy. Yeah. And then Adrian picked up over it. So, yes. And like I say, they're all family to me, so you guys all blend together. Too. No, not really. Every one of you is an individual snowflake, and I love you all. It works, I promise. But anyway, so we want to keep those feedback threads going, and I post input threads out there as well. So, you don't have to search for it on BoardGameGeek because the searching for things on BoardGameGeek is confusing. All you got to do is go to tabletopgametalk.com. I think I said all the syllables there. /BGG, as in BoardGameGeek, and it'll take you right to our podcast page. Scroll down to the bottom to see the forums.
The only page.
The only
page. BGG worth reading.
Oh, there's some other pages on there.
It's true.
Yeah. We spend a lot of time on BoardGameGeek now because with the Dice Tower News, I'm spending a lot of time trying to figure out why things are in the hotness. That is a significant portion of my life right now. It's just like, why is this popular? It makes no sense. There were 2 last week where I'm like, I just have no idea. I have no idea why this is popular. But I'll tell you what it is anyway.
I spend a lot of time figuring out, is this actually a new release or is this just a secret pretend new release that they're re-releasing a 10-year-old game and I just don't know about it.
So for those who are wondering, Kitty and I also do the Dice Tower News, and it is a very grueling process. The amount of work that goes into that 10 to 15 minute episode is probably quadruple the amount of work that goes into this show. And that's sad because we really like this show. But scripted stuff and research stuff, that's just... So let's get into people who did their work, our work for us. I think that's...
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what they did.
Perfect.
Thanks.
So our first subject is about our favorite games. So we did an episode on our favorite games, why we like them. How do you answer the question? What's your favorite game? Lots of cool stuff. That was episode 131, I'm going to guess, because it was about that many episodes ago.
That is correct.
All right. So Dominic Smith writes in, says, Kitty, you said a game can't be your favorite if you don't own it. Why not? My favorite is Flamme Rouge, and I don't own it. I play games with two different groups, and while one group will play Flamme Rouge every few weeks, the other group has no interest in playing. One person, usually our host, in the first group owns the game, and multiple people in the second group have a copy. Thus, my getting a copy would be redundant. I love the game and would still play it even every gaming session. Now, what I first want to ask Dominic is, why does your second group own multiple copies, but nobody wants to play it? But your first... but anyway... So what do you think, Kitty? Are you taking this back?
I don't know. So in my circle, I'm the one who owns the games. I usually have people come to me. I have multiple groups. I don't have this kind of reliable group. So in my case, if I didn't own a game, I couldn't be guaranteed to play it unless maybe Chris plays it. Chris owns it and I can play it there. So I guess if I have someone that I know for sure owns the game... But still, like, I'm not going to, like, take Chris's game to my other group, like, my family. So I play a lot of games with Chris, and I play a lot of games with my immediate family. So Wingspan has been my family's obsession recently. And if only Chris owned a copy, I couldn't play it with my family. And so you know exactly who you're playing with at all these times. But I don't know, like, if a game was my favorite... I would want to own a copy is maybe more accurate than if you don't own it, it can't be your favorite. That's not the right way. If it were my favorite, for me, owning it would be a requirement. So that's just a me thing.
So you're saying that it couldn't be your favorite kind of by default, because if it was a favorite game of yours, you would feel the need to own it.
Exactly.
So you're judging Dominic. For not owning his favorite game.
No, the way it sounds, it makes perfect sense. If the people he play it with own it, why buy another copy? Like Betrayal Legacy. We've been playing that together. You own a copy, especially a legacy game. It makes no sense for me to go out and get a different copy. But I love it enough that I still keep thinking maybe if I want to play it with somebody else, if I want to, you know, see how it plays out differently in two copies, I'm going to go buy a copy and, you know.
All right.
That's just a me thing.
To prove Dominic's point, though, you loved Pandemic Season 1. It was on the top of your list for, you know, when we did a list. You don't own Pandemic Season 1.
When we were playing Pandemic Season 1, we lived in the same building, and it was never more than 25 feet away through a locked door I could get through.
So you're saying even though you didn't own it, you could steal it at any time.
Also, like I said, legacy games have kind of a different thing because it makes the most sense to play them with the same group over and over. I would not rule it out for the future if I bought a second copy of Pandemic Legacy that will stay at my house that I will play through with a different group at some point.
I can see that. I just own... too many games, so I can't imagine having a favorite game that I didn't own.
Yeah.
Can you imagine owning a game that you don't own? That's the other question.
Not really, because as soon as I think about it, it shows up on my front step.
Yeah, you just have a game owning problem.
I do. But I'm getting better. I'm definitely getting better with it. I was just talking the other day about how it's like I'm buying a lot less games. And since I'm buying a lot less games, I can spend money on other things and not feel too bad about it. Such as, you know, new recording equipment, which is, wow. I will tell you, one of these days, actually, maybe I'll do this for the patrons. I'm going to put together a equipment thing that we do for this podcast. Because the system we have is so simple and easy, and the quality of the audio sounds great, and it's just simple. And then as soon as I start digging into what other people are doing, everything is so convoluted. I'm like, ugh, I just want to record six people at once. Why is this a nightmare? So I've dropped some money on microphones lately, and I'm probably going to have to spend even more. Okay, Fletcher, get me out of this.
Okay, so Tim Waterman writes in. He says, I think hobby gamers often have a hard time locking down a favorite game, even if they aren't in the cult of the new. We tend to be the type of people who are bored by just hanging out with friends and engaging in small talk. This is oft, he says, he writes oft, why we gravitate to tabletop games and why playing the same game or even a handful of games all the time would lose our interest quickly.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily going to argue with this one. I have found myself recently, when people come over, I feel obligated to set up a game because I have so many, and it's just kind of like front and center when you walk into my house. It's like, oh, there's this game room over here with 100 and some odd games. And they're like, this is a lot of games. Like, yeah, there's more on the floor that you can't see over here. And then there's a whole nother mirrored collection in the basement. So I almost have to set up a game every time someone comes over. And those games that I set up tend not to be my favorites. They just tend to be the easiest to set up and get people into. Yeah. So it's just like, oh, what's your favorite game? It's like, well, this is my favorite game, but this is the game I play with people because it's just a whole lot easier to play this game.
I was at a party recently where there were no games, and it was the first time in a long time. Like, I looked around, and I was like, there's like no one here that has a game. Like, this is bizarre to me. I don't know how I've fallen into this place, but like, even games that I have gone to where nobody is like a big hobby gamer, like, I would probably be the most hobby gamer there, you know, everyone just always like, oh, I had Sushi Go, I brought it with me, or whatever it is. Fun little party game, easily portable, can be played without a table. Those kind of games always just seem to pop out of somewhere. And there was not a game at this party. I was like, what do I do? And I feel this thing that Tim says about, like, we tend to get bored just hanging out with friends and engaging in small talk. And I was like, I didn't think I was that person until I was in that situation. And I am.
You've been broken.
I know.
I mean,
oh, this would be so much better if I just had a game in my hand, a thing to carry the conversation when there's those lulls that always happen in a group and everyone just kind of looks at their drink like, huh.
But that's what the thing is it's hard to pick a game, though. Like, sometimes it's just relaxing if I don't have to set something up and I don't have to teach anybody. It's like, ah, this feels good. But that's why I carry the mind around, because the mind is awesome. You pull it out of your pocket, you're like, I'm going to teach you this game. And then people are watching and they're fascinated by what's going on. They're like, this makes no sense. Why are you having fun? And we're like, we don't know, but we are.
I'm excited for Wavelength. I think that's going to be more my style.
Wavelength, it's something, I don't think it's still live on Kickstarter, baby, probably late pleasure. It's kind of like the mind, but with
it's by the same stats. Designer.
Yeah. So you're trying to, like, you know, it's hot or cold, and you have a range between hot and cold, and you have to say a clue that says, you know, kind of puts people to guess that range. So you're like, coffee. Well, coffee is pretty hot, but is it as hot as you can get? I mean, it's not lava, but it's, you know, certainly not on the cold side of things. So anyway, it seems fun. Those types of games are sort of perfect for the party atmosphere.
Insider, always a good one.
Yep. Fletcher, what are your go-to party games? Because you have a lot of, like, party or more parties-ish games, right?
Yeah, I do. So actually, just this other, just this past weekend, I busted out. I got it as a gift, actually, a while ago, but I've never actually played it. What Do You Meme?
My brother's a huge fan of that one.
Yeah, so busted, and it's a lot like, what am I thinking of? What's that party game that everybody plays that a lot of people hate?
The game that shall not be
Cards Against Humanity?
Yeah, Cards Against Humanity. It's a lot like that game. It's not that game, but it's a lot like it. And it was fun. It was a good time. These are people with, like, casual, gaming hobbyists, and they're like, oh, what kind of games do you have? And I showed them, like, my relatively small collection compared to you guys. And they're like, oh, what do you mean? Do you have, like, and they're like, let's play this one. And I'm like, okay. So I pulled it down, and I'm like, I've never actually played this game yet. And I open it up. I'm like, where are the instructions? There's no instructions in the box. And then I go on the back, and I'm like, oh, okay. And the instructions are pretty, like, you know, here's this picture. You put it on this little easel thing, and then everybody has cards, and it's like, you know, you vote on the best one that wins, that, like, captures whatever the meme is trying to convey.
The instructions are apples to apples with memes.
Exactly. So then I was like, are there supposed to be instructions? And I looked it up, and like, no, there's not really any instructions. You just make it all up. And it even says, like, you can count if you want to, or you can just, you know, keep playing until you're hungry and then just
order. Whose line is it anyway? Style? Yeah. The you points just, like, don't matter.
Exactly.
That's the.
So I was actually thinking about, Chris, your comment last time of, like, nobody's keeping score. And nobody was keeping score. We literally just kept playing until we're like, we're hungry. Let's order a pizza. Like it said on the back of the box.
Yep. I love that game end condition. When everyone's hungry, the game is over.
Yeah. Chris, and it was fun. But, you know, it's like Cards Against Humanity.
Chris, have you seen this Kickstarter for offensive adult party game?
No.
Oh my gosh, you should check it out. It's a person. It is basically the Kickstarter that is a rant about how much this person dislikes Cards Against Humanity. And there are two kinds of cards. There's a black card, and they all read, "I like playing offensive adult party games because," and the white card says, "I lack creativity and enjoy the illusion of being funny." And this is a game that is on Kickstarter right now. There are 22 days left in this Kickstarter campaign as we record, and it is $10. They have $7,600 of people who are fed up with...
I don't understand this. I'm sorry. This is my little rant. I'm not a huge fan of Cards Against Humanity. It has its place. But this to me seems like, why would anybody want this?
I don't know.
It's like proving your gamer cred that like, oh, I'm so into other games that I can't do this anymore.
If you break it out at a party or you bring it to a party or you have it, people are just going to be confused. They're going to be like, what? I don't get it. Like, are you insulting me?
Well, it's...
What's happening?
I think the point is when somebody breaks out Cards Against Humanity, you're like, well, let's play this other game instead. And that's your condescending way of saying, I don't want to play Cards Against Humanity. Because
it's just like a paperweight that says, look how cool I am. I don't like Cards Against Humanity.
Now, I do... All right. So last week, I think we did this too. We went on a rant about terraforming Mars. So I know there's a lot of people who like Cards Against Humanity. It is an icebreaker. I was about to say great icebreaker. But the best reason I've heard that Cards Against Humanity is not a good game is not because of the gameplay at all. It is apples to apples, just an adult version. Fine. You know? And it is sort of that same thing. It's like, here's these two cards. I can pretend I'm funny. Okay, fine. The problem I heard that I actually kind of agree with is it can force people into an uncomfortable situation that wasn't expecting to be there. So Cards Against Humanity is not, it's not PC, it's not rated G or even PG in a lot of cases. And, suddenly somebody who wasn't expecting to be in that kind of environment says, oh yeah, I'll play this game. It sounds fun. I can play it. And now they're forced to be in a very awkward situation for them and they didn't realize they were going to be there. So all I'm saying with Cards Against Humanity, I don't like the gameplay. Personally, I don't find forced humor funny, but... If you are playing Cards Against Humanity with a group, make sure everyone who's involved knows what's going on and don't assume that that kind of humor works for everybody. I am not an offended person. I am not offended by Cards Against Humanity at all, but I can understand where some people are. And I've been in groups where I've not noticed actual awkwardness from certain people because of that situation.
It's also very hard if you are a wholesome person to win because I don't mind offensive brands of humor, but I'm not good at it because it's not really what I do. So I always lose.
Yeah.
So that's probably why I don't like it.
Well, I mean, what you find funny, because it really is a certain kind of sense of humor.
You're like trying to guess. It's like about knowing people. You're trying to guess what they'll think is funny. And if it's not something that you find funny, it's hard to convince anyone else that it's funny. Like, because, sometimes they'll say like, oh, defend your card. I'm like, I don't have a defense. I played it because I thought you would think it's funny. That's all I thought.
Yeah. Yep.
Those are my moments with that game. And that's why it's not my favorite.
Yep. So I just want to let everyone know. It's like, yes, sometimes we get down on certain games and not all of us are against it. Fletcher, you like Cards Against Humanity, right? I think you mentioned
that. I mean, I like it. I'm not going to say it's my favorite game or anything, but it's fine.
So, I mean, we're not all against it. And if I was in a group and it's like, hey, someone said, let's play Cards Against Humanity, I would. Or all of the 50,000 different versions of Apples to Apples that are out there. I will play them in a group because, sure, why not? I'm hanging around with people and having fun. It's just, I'm hanging around with people that I have fun hanging around with, regardless of what I'm doing. So it doesn't matter what I'm doing. It's just that sometimes it pulls out the awkwardness. And if you're not fully bought into those kinds of games, they're hard to play. It's sort of like social deduction games, right?
It
pulls out something in some people that just makes them uncomfortable. And if you force it on them, that can actually have a very negative lasting experience. This is why Kitty will never play social deduction games with me ever again.
Exactly. But moving on, Marina has some feedback. She is a librarian. She's bringing us a librarian's perspective. When talking to people about gaming, I usually adjust the question, like I would when talking to people about books, to what are games that you love or games you have recently played and enjoyed, rather than asking for favorites. Similarly, when asked, I also adjust my answer to answer those questions instead of what they actually asked. Frequently, like books, it's hard to pick a single favorite, and it's easier to talk about multiples or what I've been enjoying enjoying lately. She also adds that many public libraries are now circulating board games, so check them out for trying new games or consider donating your unused games, and it will give more people a chance to enjoy them.
So this makes sense, but I have to say this sounds like the classic interview technique where when someone asks you a question, you reframe the question and then answer that question.
It's a very
but you're not actually move, yeah, you're yeah. not actually answering the original question. You're just like, oh, okay, well, let me take your question, come up with something a little bit different, and then answer that, which is fine. But sometimes people just want to know, like, what's your, like, what is your favorite? Like, instead of things of, like, what are you playing right now? It's like, if you had to get down to it, what is it? If you had to pick one game.
Well, this is the classic, you know, when somebody asks what your favorite is, and you go, I don't know, who's your favorite child? Like, you know, there's just sometimes I don't have a favorite. And so instead exactly I will answer. I mean, I only have the one child right now, so he's my favorite. It's pretty easy. But it's really hard for me to answer the question. So I usually give like a joke like that of like, oh, well, you know, who's your favorite kid? Oh, it's hard for me to pick a game, you know, like, yeah, sure. It's scaling the attachment value, but it is, you know, it's hard for me to pick. So I just go with like this is my favorite today. If you ask me tomorrow, I'll probably have a different one.
So my favorite response is the Groundhog's Day response, which was the movie Groundhog's Day, one of the best movies of all time. And He's a weatherman, and someone asks him, like, oh, you know, it's like, you know, great weather we're having today or whatever. And then he goes into this spiel about the weather, and he's like, were you really wanting to talk about the weather, or were you just making small talk? And she's like, I was just making small talk. So when someone says, what's your favorite game? It's like, well, if we're talking about party games, I'm going to go this way. But if you're looking at deep strategy, I want to do this. But if a social deduction game, this is my favorite. Although this one here is a close runner-up, but they have the kind of different feels to them here. And then you just kind of go in, and then their eyes glaze over. It's like, oh, you just wanted me to say Monopoly, didn't you? All right. Corey says, regarding my comment about cockroach poker, I cannot say that word, which made some sense in his head. He had written in about cockroach poker, and I was unable to, I think, convey his thoughts, so he's helping me clarify here. My point was much alone. See, this is why I can't clarify, because I can't actually read.
Reveal that we're recording on a Monday night, and we are all like,
I have to have this edited and posted in 3 hours. He says, my point was much along the lines of remarks made about people whose favorites are always on the hotness are probably just into the cult of the new. Cockroach poker is basically a party game, and people who love party games are sometimes prejudged a certain way by others in our hobby who do not care for party games. You know, serious gamers.
Yeah. You know, I feel like this is part of the, like, rap that the community gets. And honestly, I don't find this as much in person. I seem to see it more online between people. And I think that the more we're getting a larger group of people into the hobby, the less you get this kind of like, oh, attitude when you say what like your favorite game is, if it's a fun, casual, easy game.
We did just spend the last 15 minutes ragging on Cards Against Humanity, though.
Yeah.
But not because it is a simple and easy game, but because we had other issues with it. And not, like, I think we all talked about, like, we have party games that we love. I had party games on my list of favorite games. It was 18 games long, so it didn't really narrow it down. But I have nothing against party games as a genre. And I would never judge somebody who said cockroach poker. I'd probably say, I've never heard of that. Tell me more about it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that with party games, and I definitely see this where if you're like on BGG or something and someone posts a party game, it'll get like, yeah, well, that's just a party game. Like, that's a relatively common thing. That's just a party game. Codenames, for example, selling millions of copies. That's just a party game. I personally don't like Codenames because I don't think it's a very interactive party game, but I don't, you know, begrudge anyone who does like it. It's not a bad game in any means, and I've enjoyed playing it the times I have played it. But I think Codenames is a four-person game. It's not a party game. Although other people would argue, it's like, well, the more people you have, the more discussion, the more conversation. Yeah. Okay, fine. It's a fine game. I'm going to just go play Codename Marbles. I don't know. I like it.
All right. So Charlotte Smith, she writes in, she talks about her gaming obsessions as his Android Netrunner. An Arkham Horror?
Yeah. Okay. Wait, you just switched us topics. Okay. This is abrupt. We've gone from our favorite games to now Gaming Obsessions, which are sort of related, but not quite. All right, carry on.
So she writes in about Android Netrunner and Arkham Horror. We can financially afford to keep up with both of these card games. I don't think these obsessions are in any way negative, but then maybe calling them obsessions is exaggerated as well. I have never really understood the extreme forms of completionism when it comes to buying. People get upset. The publisher gives out promos and at conventions that they can't get elsewhere, or let content creators have exclusive promos. These are such small things and not properly playtested or part of the game anyway.
So Chris is somebody who collects these avidly for a lot of games that you have. What do you think about this? Is that where the obsession comes in? Is that where it crosses from just being like, this is my hobby, to like, I must have it all? Is
I think
getting into these like promos and stuff.
So whenever I use the term obsession when it comes to hobbies and gaming, it is always used tongue in cheek. If I thought something was an actual obsession, then okay, we should see somebody about that. So, you know, I'm in the same boat of I collect every Arkham Horror card released. Like, I want them all. I don't have one promo investigator, and it kills me every time I think about it. It kills me because when I go on, I'm going to build my deck. I'm like, oh, that's the investigator I can't pick. Why is it the only one I want to pick? Why? Because I don't have it. So, but it's still kind of like that fun. If I ever find it, I'm like, it'll give me a great sense of completion. Living card games are great to be obsessed over, though, because you can collect all of them. You don't have to go out and spend a crazy amount of money. It's, you know, $12 to $15 a month and you have it. In my case, Arkham Horror, since I got two sets of everything because I'm obsessed with it, it's a little bit more. But it's a set amount of money each month that I can control, and I have a lot of fun with it. So for me, obsessions, yeah. If you're obsessed with a particular game, that's awesome. That just means that you love it. And Terrence sort of makes that point too, because Terrence says, I was at my most obsessed with HeroClix back when it first came out. It was awesome getting to the table superhero battles. And the thrill of the blind buy was a lot of fun. Now, HeroClix, if you're not familiar with it, is a tabletop miniatures game and by WizKids, where you buy packages and the miniatures that you get inside of it are completely random. There'll be commons, uncommons, and rares. It's sort of a Magic the Gathering model. So you can spend a lot of money trying to collect all this stuff.
Sounds like Shopkins.
It's anything where it's a blind open. It's the slot machine thing. And it is fun.
It's so much fun.
It is so much fun. So he said, I had some other stuff going on in my life, and I often joke that I was a safer habit than others I could have acquired at that point in my life. I was playing every week and up to four times a week. It was great. I met a lot of people and made friends and still have to this day. Was it an obsession? I would be willing to concede it was. An unhealthy one? No, I don't think so. The bills were always getting paid, and I didn't miss any important events for tournaments, but I did spend a lot of time scouring the internet for news about the next set, what teams were winning big events, and commenting on various subjects related to the game. I still check the message boards from time to time, but this is a habit that will end, that is well and truly ended for me. So I agree here, and this kind of like piggybacks off of Charlotte's point. If you can afford to do it, it's not really an obsession. It's just the way you're choosing to spend your disposable income.
Yeah. So on obsessions, we also have one from Humble Tech Priest on BGG. I think he's addressing Chris here. I, too, have the issue of FOMO, fear of missing out. Usually, if I can't afford the top level of a Kickstarter, I'd rather not have it. The other thing I find is I tend to avoid games that have already been around a while with many add-ons, simply because, as a completionist, it's a steep price to enter and to buy everything up to that point. For example, I would have considered Attack Wing for Star Trek in the beginning if I had spotted it in the first couple waves. Now it is up to over 24 waves with re-releases of older models. The buy-in for me would be in the thousands.
So, yeah, I would say, at least for me, these kind of gaming obsessions with the slot machine, blind open, that kind of stuff, can be a slippery slope for me. I remember back in college, I really liked playing, I don't know if you guys ever played it, Pirates of the Spanish Main?
No.
Have you heard of
no.
that?
No.
That? Okay, so it's a blind open pack game. I forget who it's by. But essentially, there's cards, and half the fun is obviously figuring out what you're getting, but then you each card has like a punch out of a ship, and you assemble like this little tiny miniature ship out of like this like plastic cardstock. And then you actually have this like little tiny miniature pirate ship or schooner or something on the table that you then move around. Yeah, Pirates of the Spanish Main. And you use the length of the card to see like how much it can move. So it has a little bit of like a Warhammer element of like distance and rulers and how far you can shoot and stuff like that and how much you can turn.
Whoa. I was not expecting this level of detail.
Yeah, it's actually really cool. So back when I was in college, I played this game with my friends, and I didn't have a large disposable income. But this game was like pretty fun, and I remember liking it a lot. And then we all moved away, graduated from college, and I never played it again, and I don't even know where my ships are anymore. But it's one of those things, like, if I were to get back into it or, like, something similar, like, I could just see myself, now that I have a much larger disposable income, just spending countless amounts of money on something like this.
Yeah, my point about this, so they were saying it would be in the thousands to buy into this game now. That just means you would have spent, like, it's in installments. You're still spending thousands on these games. I don't get it.
But there's something...
It's not my thing, but though, there's something. I get that.
There's something with the overtime thing that's okay. It's sort of like that subscription where, you know, at the end, I have a stack of... Oh, who has stacks of magazines anymore? But if you did, you know, it's like, look at all these that I have. Comic books. Comic books are a good one to say. It's like, I had a subscription for it, so I bought them in real time, and I have all my comic books in the basement. And but if I went back and had...
Just six easy payments.
Six. No. I will say, though, X-Wing... Like, this is specifically here. This is not a blind buy. The X-Wing is an open pack.
Card. And this was a Star Trek one.
Yep. And they also have or not X-Wing, this is Attack Wing. Attack Wing Star Trek. They also have Attack Wing D&D. And when that first came out, it was like flying around dragons and stuff. I'm like, oh man, I have to resist this so hardcore. Because these are pre-painted miniatures of great detail for what they are in display case type of boxes. So you can see all the gorgeousness of them. And there's a compelling game in there as well. Fortunately, I skipped the first couple waves. So now when I see them, I'm like, yep, I didn't get into it. So I don't have to worry about it. And I would never go back and I can't say that because I have done it for some games. But
you've done it. I know you have.
Yeah. But for something like that, I'm like, I don't go back for it. But that's the same reason why I don't get into X-Wing and why I don't get into Armada, because those are great miniatures and the games are great. And, you know, there's a very active community at my local game store for these games. But as soon as I get one, I know that I'm just going to want to just go all in. And that is something, a slope that I can't go on. Maybe it's just me. Most people can say, oh, I'm just going to buy this fleet or whatever, and I'm going to be happy playing that.
I think that it's like you can only have one of these kinds of like obsessions. Maybe that's what we mean by obsession, is like this is what you have picked to be all in on. Because I don't know a lot of people who are all in on more than one of this kind of game.
Sorry. Just
clear my throat there. You? Well, I know that you're sort of in on a couple
right now,
but you're all in on Arkham Horror right now. That's what I hear about from you. I hear all in on Arkham Horror LCG.
Well, I'm all in on Keyforge, and there's no possible way to collect all of those.
I was gonna say, that's like you're trying to break, like you're gonna break your brain trying to be all in on Keyforge. There's no way to do it. There's nothing you can do.
I have so many decks. I tell you, this year at Gen Con, which is something I need to find our set our date very quickly. I'm just going to bring a bunch of Keyforge decks too, and those are just going to like toss them out and going to hit people in the head and give them concussions. But it'll be fine, I promise. Maybe I'll just rubber band like two together so you have like a whole set that you can play. That could work out well. Anyway, that Arkham Horror. I still collect all of the Game of Thrones second edition cards because when we do play those, I want to have everything because paying a little bit every month is way better than having to catch up and spend several hundred dollars to get a bunch of back issues, backpacks, I guess. Backpacks. See what I did there? But yeah, there's other things that I've been obsessed with. I'm trying to get out of the Kickstarter thing so much. The Root Kickstarter is out right now with all the expansion stuff. I'm definitely going to back it. I'm trying to decide in my heart.
You have all the things already. You just need the expansion.
I need the expansion. I need there's a couple upgrade things that I want in there too. So it's that's why I say I'm just going to get the expansion and the upgrade pack, because the upgrade pack is like $5. It upgrades the rules and some of the player boards. And I'm going to call it an expansion probably, or if, do I call it one of my 10? So this is, I have to like, you know, look into my heart.
How many have you backed this year?
Only two so far.
Two. Oh. Yep.
Although it's really hard right now, because right now there are so many good Kickstarters out there. So it's rough.
If you're interested, Dice Tower News.
Yes. All right. Games versus activities versus puzzles, but basically games versus activities. And before I even read any of this feedback, I just want everyone to know this whole subject was tongue in cheek. So if we upset anyone, I don't think we did. I don't think we got any really bad feedback. The idea that that's not a game, that's an activity, is a ridiculous thing. If it's a fun activity, it's a fun activity. If you want to call a particular fun activity a game, awesome. It's just a way of helping us categorize our activities. There is absolutely no judginess on this at all. That said, the game I was judgy on, because it's not a game, Tim commented on. So Tim says, I love that you brought up left, right, center. My dad discovered that quote unquote game years ago and became obsessed. Well, as obsessed as total non-gamer can get. So this segues well into our last subject. When I would visit them in Florida around the holidays, they had a tradition of throwing a LRC, left, right, center, party for all their friends the night before Christmas. But they'd also end up playing on Christmas Eve and on Christmas Day. I think Christmas Eve is the night before Christmas, but that's not the point. And at their neighbor's house. The whole time I'd be thinking to myself, but why? I know my neighbors have a copy of Acquire. Anyway, all the games are activities by nature, but most activities, even the fun ones, aren't necessarily games. So I agree with that.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much where we fell in our, I don't know, I don't think we ever come to any concrete conclusions. I think we just talk for an hour. And it's like, this is our jumping off point.
Oh. Have you guys, and I think I asked you guys last time, you guys have not played LRC?
I haven't.
I have not. You described it, though.
Yeah.
I feel like I got the whole experience.
It really is. There's not much more than that. But I completely understand why people enjoy this. There are a ton of activities where you can sit around a table and they're relatively mindless, but you still get this chance of winning. And everybody has that same chance of winning. It's like a little bit more complicated than, you know, flipping up five cards and seeing who drew the highest card, because it's just more involved. And I don't necessarily think this is bad. Like I say, it doesn't follow my rules or my definition of a game. But if it feels like a game, then sure, to that group, it is a game. It is something, you know, Candyland's a game. Sure. You don't make any decisions, but it's still a game to little kids, because that is a game to them. And that's completely fine.
Okay. So Nate also writes in on this topic, and he writes, never thought about the distinctions until this episode. Does it matter? Maybe. For some people, probably. For me, not at all. If I enjoy it, then I'm happy whether it's called a game, puzzle, or activity.
See, Nate breaks it right down. Makes it simple. And I do think that more than anything else, this only matters to the people who want to be contrary.
But, I feel like I had a big revelation halfway through this episode where I was like, oh, I just feel like somebody's telling me I'm having fun wrong.
Yeah.
And that makes me sad. Yep. And I should stop caring about what other people say, because that's the problem. Not anything that I'm doing or the fun that I'm having. It's the like letting other people make me feel sad.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, it's kind of a way of, you know, bullying gamers. And I don't even think that in a bad way. It's just kind of like, you know, there are people out there that are just contrary. They enjoy having arguments for argument's sake. You know, Spencer and I are a lot like that, right?
Oh my gosh.
Give us a subject and we have so much fun just arguing about it, right? And we will argue points that we don't even believe in just for the sake of having fun, having that discussion. Other people, it drives people nuts.
And that's totally fine if you know that that's what you're doing, you know what the other person is doing, and it's staying a fun discussion. But I think sometimes it comes across as kind of like gatekeepery, kind of like, oh, well, you know, if it's the attitude. But as long as it's just like a fun thing, you know, as long as it's staying fun, there's no harm in these kinds of discussions.
Yeah, the problem is when people, like, I just played a game, you and I just played something, and I didn't mm-hmm. enjoy it. But it's one of your favorite things. And I really don't know. Maybe I do know how much you enjoy it. And I can say, yeah, that's not even a game. That at that point is not insulting the what I just did is not insulting the activity. It's like a personal slight against you, whether I know I did it or not.
Yeah,
you know? Definitely. So there's are better ways to say, yeah, I didn't really enjoy that. Or,
you know, instead of just saying like, oh, the mind, it's not a game.
Yeah. No, it is.
Just say it wasn't my favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So just be nice about it. And like I say, if you want to discuss the merits of it, by all means. I love the Ludology podcast simply because they do. They go into the details of these things. They did an entire episode on the mind and whether or not it was a game or not. Like, they take away is it is a game. There.
All right. Steve says, in the episode, you talk about how the less randomness there is, the more like a puzzle it is. But I would say this is only true about solo or cooperative games, because 18XX.
Yeah, 18XX games are a whole series of kind of train stock market games.
It's like the
games.
Year 18 something. Yeah. Okay. I remember this now. Or chess have no randomness, but they are not puzzles. They are unpredictable because you have a thinking opponent. Tic-tac-toe isn't even considered a puzzle because you have an opponent who doesn't always react the way you expect. So I guess that means that puzzles cannot be competitive. Can anyone think of a competitive puzzle? There has to be something that would fit that definition, although I have no idea what it would be. So Todd responded on BGG to this comment from Steve, and he said that the only competitive style puzzles he can think of is like who can solve it first, who's the fastest kind of competitive puzzles. And he also pointed out the chess puzzles thing, that a lot of chess studies books will set out these puzzles where they like give you a setup and you have to like, white has check in three moves, like show your work. I'm obviously not that into chess. So.
I mean, you can compete with yourself, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Like even if it's like a Rubik's Cube, you can say, I can solve this in 5 minutes. I can solve it in 2 minutes. I mean, it's kind of a competition. You're just, you know, beating your best.
Well, especially if you're doing competitive puzzles are basically who can do it faster. Now, interesting though, Pandemic, there are Pandemic tournaments where the decks are all preset and everyone's playing, every table is playing the same set of cards and the shuffle is the same every time. So instead of drawing a card, you'll be told what cards come up. In those cases, Pandemic is a cooperative game. All four people at each table are playing. Everyone's playing the same game, and you are trying to solve that puzzle better than everyone else. Now, it's a very, like, you have to set that up in order to make that happen. But I will say that, yeah, as far as competitive play is concerned, this is sort of a sliding scale. Because when I look at, and I hate to keep bringing up KeyForge, but when I'm playing KeyForge against myself, what I'm doing is I'm playing the board. My hand and what I can see on the board, and trying to make the best move based on what I can see. And that is kind of puzzly when your opponent is not involved on your turn and there is a, you know, theoretical best move you can do with the information you have. That could be considered a kind of competitive puzzle, but I don't know if that really goes far enough for the point that Todd's trying to make. All right, let's go into theme. And theme was, I think this comes up, so I have... If we don't talk about Wingspan, I need to talk about Wingspan at the end. But I think someone talks about it, so I'll bring it up.
Yes, it comes up.
Don says, I have to agree on Terraforming Mars. The graphic design and the component quality are serious downers to that game. That said, I absolutely love playing the game. The theme is great and the mechanics work really well. I also have to agree that whichever of you said that the distinction between theme and setting is pedantic. I was able to say this in my head a little while ago. Pedantic.
There you go.
There's a second definition to theme in the dictionary that reads, an idea that recurs in or pervades a work of art or literature. I think that better fits what we mean by theme when it comes up to tabletop games, far more than the word setting.
I think that you're onto something there, Don, and that almost everything we discuss on this podcast is a pedantic search into the world of vocabulary.
Yes.
We do just a lot of waffling about how do we define words. We should really be like a grammar podcast sometimes.
Next week, we are not doing any kind of definition thing. Sometimes we warn people.
Oh.
We warn people that, hey, there's definition episodes that come up. And, you know, sometimes it's fun to discuss those.
I always love it when we start the beginning. We're not going to get into, I think, Charlotte, who is CNH Smith. We have discovered that the C is Charlotte. And she's Yeah. She pointed out, she's like, oh, at the beginning of the episode, you're like, oh, we're not going to talk definitions and what words mean the whole time. And then you proceed to do that for an hour.
Yes.
We do it all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. If we say that, it means that's what we're about to do.
Yes. We're not going to do this thing. And let me tell you how we're not going to do it for 45 to 55 minutes.
Okay. So Mark Phelps writes in. And he starts talking about a theme is pasted on if the actions can't be explained in a way that makes sense in the theme. And says the theme is a way to filter games he's considered buying. He writes, for me, theme is important. There are some themes such as sci-fi, space, exploration, building, animals, dinosaurs, pirates, that I generally find attractive. There are a number of other common themes that I find objectionable, and I will not buy or play those games that use those themes. Cthulhu, demons, zombies, witches. He added, theme is one aspect to help determine if I will enjoy the game, along with the mechanics and mechanisms, component quality, art, graphic design, playability, and ease of teaching.
Yeah, I think that the whole idea of theme as a way of filtering out games is just as important as a way of theme as, you know, attracting you to games. I really like space games. I don't like zombie games. And I totally understand that. There's a lot of, you know, when you're talking about Cthulhu, demons, zombies, witches, there's a lot of people that are just uncomfortable playing in those themes. And not only, you know, may they be overdone, especially when it comes to Cthulhu and zombies, but, it, you know, some themes can actually be offensive to people. And it's sort of, that's kind of what's a thing that's nice about theme is like, all right, I know what this theme is. I know the tropes of it, and I know I don't like those tropes, so I'm going to avoid it. And it's one of the reasons why publishers will retheme games that, you know, maybe at first had a theme that wasn't appealing to a lot of people. Arcadia Quest, which is a fantasy, you know, kind of take that game and turning it into Starcradia Quest is a sci-fi game. If you don't like fantasy, maybe you'll like the sci-fi version of the relatively same game. Terraforming Mars, or not Terraforming Mars, Terra Mystica and the Gaia Project. Same, actually the exact same thing in those situations. And I used to be, I mean, I'm not trying to talk anybody into it, but I used to be very much anti-Cthulhu, anti-zombies, just because they just didn't interest me. And now some of my favorite games are Cthulhu and zombies, because the mechanics and the stories are really, really interesting and compelling. And the theme itself is just becomes kind of a backdrop. It's not something I take overly seriously. It's like, okay, there's a horde of things I have to fight against in the zombie game. Or Cthulhu, something mysterious is happening. I'm trying to figure out what that is. It's kind of neat.
Yeah, I think still theme is like just what gets me to pick up the box. But a lot of times I think you'll miss out on games that you'll really like just because it doesn't have the theme that draws you in. I think, you know, maybe my lesson from this episode was to be more open-minded. Maybe pick up a Cthulhu game.
Well, you did.
Don't judge a game by its cost.
Yes.
Also, I think, you know, when we get in this habit of when there's one really popular Cthulhu game, something comes out and it's like the hotness, it's up there on BGG forever, everyone talks about it, then you start seeing more and more come out. And it's usually, there's some really good ones. Like, oh, somebody got inspired by this. They went and they read all the Lovecraft stuff too. They really built in the mechanics to their game. It makes sense. It's great too. So there's like a wave of like people who are inspired by it. But there's also like a wave of people who are like, well, this is where I'm going to make my money. And I'm just going to slap that theme on top of whatever game I have available. And it's really hard to kind of weigh through those. Yeah. Whereas something that like Wingspan is such a unique theme, it's really going to stand alone.
Yeah.
And it's,
well,
spot.
And that brings up an interesting point. So theme, you know, we say theme as far as like the genre or whatnot, but art can be its own theme as well. You know, like Tournament at Camelot is not a game, yeah, I would have ever picked up based on the box art. Even though I like the King Arthur mythos and all of that stuff, that theme attracts me, but the art didn't. And then in other games that are terrible, the art's cool. And I'm like, oh, I like that art. I'm going to buy it based on the art alone, regardless of what the theme is and regardless of whether or not the game is good. So that whole box by a cover thing.
Mm-hmm. All right. Moving on. Eric wrote in and said, this is a topic for board games that I don't think there's one answer. I think theme is important to grab players' attention, but it can hurt as well. Hence why I have so many zombie and Cthulhu games. If I see a game with those themes, I grab it right away to check it out. The other side of the coin is if there's a space game, I tend not to look at it. blah. Now, I don't think that makes it a bad game. That this can go on, but basically, I think that theme does matter in today's game market with so many out there to grab the consumer's attention. I don't think a pasted-on one is bad either, as long as the game makes a little sense to its theme and is an enjoyable game.
I would say that a theme is kind of like a jumping-off point. Yeah. And if anything, I've learned, at least for me personally, is more of the gameplay that I'm interested and less of the theme. The theme may push me to pick up or try a certain game before another. But, I mean, a bad game is a bad game regardless of the theme. And a good game is a good game regardless of the theme.
I just love how this is completely opposite of Mark's taste. So, Mark, if you see any games you don't want to play, let Eric know. He'll pick them up from you. Eric, pass all your space games over to Mark. All right. Christopher Dong. For me, I often use theme to triage new-to-me games. If it is a theme I do not really care about, horror, Cthulhu, or something I find offensive, even if a tongue-in-cheek, I'll save my time and forgo looking at it. And I know that the theme will make it a game I am not interested in playing. If it is a theme that holds extra interest for me, science, biology, health, medical, or real science space, or space science, or science space, it gets an automatic...
Science space.
It gets an automatic... preliminary look. If it is somewhere in between, I'll take a superficial look at the game and its theme to determine if I find it interesting or not. If the game mechanisms are good and the gameplay is engaging, do I need theme? No, but a game is certainly much better with an interesting theme that works with the game. The more the designers and developers can integrate the theme into actual gameplay, the more enjoyable and rewarding the play experience and the greater the chance that the game will be played often. I don't know what else to say to this. I think this is like...
That's a great summary.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, Fletcher, we're just going to... Christopher, you said it perfectly. And
yeah, we've got nothing to add.
Nothing to add. But this next one, I have something to add.
I know you do.
Okay. So Todd writes in, Wingspan was mentioned a bunch. You can tell that the creators of the game really care about birds and try to cram as much bird info as they could into the game. For others who care about birds, the game is very thematic. For someone like me who doesn't care about birds, I overlook all that stuff and just focus on the mechanisms and trying to win the game. For that certain point of view, that game is similar to other tableau builders. Spend a resource to draw a card. Discard the card and gain a resource, etc. He goes on to talk about the flavor text and how most games he ignores it, but he gives a shout out to Imagination, Duel, and Sentinels of the Multiverse for having that really grab his attention.
I didn't write a sentence there. That's my fault.
So this is... I have to agree here. So I think last week... I mentioned something along the lines of Wingspan doesn't really have a theme that ties into the gameplay. You could retheme Wingspan to just about anything and the gameplay would still work, which is basically what Todd is saying here, is the theme can, you can drop it away. If you're not interested in birds, you can just not even look at the pictures of the birds. It doesn't matter anymore. The game is still compelling by itself. However, after reading the New York Times article about the designer of this game and how much work she put into this and knowing what inspired this, like she actually was quoted in the New York Times as saying, I wanted a game that was like Race for the Galaxy but with birds. And that's essentially what she came up with, was a tableau building game but with birds. And she did incorporate them in such a way that it matters. It matters that these birds have certain kinds of nests and certain habitats, and the theme is there, and it is throughout the entire, you know, as you're playing things, you're playing them in certain habitats, and that matters. And what birds go in each one matters, and how the birds, you know, their powers, even though there's a lot of repeated ones, the different types of birds have specific kinds of powers.
Yeah, it's a really tricky one because the theme is, it really does seem like it matters, but at the same time, you could take this. I think you might have said this when you were talking about it the first time. You could change all the symbols, make it an outer space game, turn it into alien species and planets. But the way that the actual bird species have been like so carefully researched, and there's like so much real life information informing this game, it feels like the theme is maybe more incorporated than It actually is.
Yeah. Well, and they are working on an expansion, so maybe that'll even bring more of that theme in there. So for those who don't know about the New York Times article, I just assume everyone listens to Dice Tower News now, so there'll be some cross-contamination there. Just search New York Times Wingspan, and it'll come up. And it was a really long article, covered a ton of different things.
Yeah.
It was a really good read. Yeah, really, really good. So check it out. I think you get like 3 articles a month free on the New York Times, and so you should be able to read the whole article without costing anything. All right, let's talk about weddings.
All right. Terrence wrote in. This is some advice for you, Fletcher. He offers his congratulations and says his advice for weddings is after the pictures are taken, take 10 to 15 minutes and duck away for a quick bite to eat together. I made a point to sit down, enjoy being married, and eat a meal together. And eat the meal we went to so much trouble to plan and the expense to buy for our family and friends. People think they will get to eat during the meal, but there is a pretty steady stream of well-wishers, so it can be tough. I've heard too many stories about the couples that did not get to eat, so we made sure we did. Neither me or my wife do well when hangry.
I want to say I completely agree with this, because Sydney and I at our reception, like, it was a buffet-style reception, so we had to actually go and get food. And we didn't have time to do that. And we had to force ourselves to sit down and like, okay, we're taking 2 minutes. Let's just go eat something. Cause otherwise, like, this 2 or 3 drinks that we have the time to drink are going to hit us really, really hard. But yeah, no, do this.
Yeah. I did not eat the food at my own wedding because, true story, Spencer forgot his pants 45 minutes away. So the whole time the photographer was supposed to be taking pictures of all the groomsmen, the photographer was doing nothing because I was not being informed, so she couldn't take bridesmaid pictures. So I ended up taking all of my pictures during dinner, but I did get 2 pieces of cake. So
made up for it.
It all worked out.
Yeah, this is good if I just get a steady stream of wedding advice. I think someone else wrote in with another piece of advice too. But yeah,
it's fun.
This is definitely good and helpful.
Yep. So Karma's going to have to start listening to the podcast so she can get all the advice too. All right. That is feedback, which took us longer than I expected.
I told you it would. It always does.
Okay. So now we get to the point of the show where we're making announcements. First announcement. Well, all right. First announcement is we're doing our winner for feedback because it's on the list. And if I don't say it now, I'm going to forget it. So
drum roll,
Don Gilstrap, you are the winner. So Don, email me. Let me know if you want an Amazon or a Cool Stuff Inc. gift card. And you have won $50. I will send it to you via email. Next part. And let's see, it's sort of ties into this sort of, there's all of this is all related. There's a lot here. So buckle up, people. You know how long this podcast is. You're ready for it. This will be the last $50 gift card we give out for feedback. And this will be the last feedback episode we do. So why did we do the feedback episodes in the first place? Let's see. We've been doing these for, I want to say, almost 30-some episodes now.
I believe this is our 7th dedicated feedback episode.
Yep. So the idea behind them originally was, if we put feedback all in one episode, then we could record multiple episodes in a week when there were scheduling conflicts. So at the time, we were trying to make sure that, you know, Josh's schedule, we could kind of all sync up and make sure we were all able to record things. Well, it turned out even doing that was more problematic than we could. So we've been just recording every week. So having the feedbacks be once a month doesn't actually make our lives easier. I don't know if it's that compelling of an episode just to hear a bunch of feedback. And so we're like, okay, this is probably not the best. Kitty, how long did you spend doing notes today?
2.5 at least hours.
Yeah. So it's just, there's a lot of work that goes into these episodes. So we want to break them up a little bit more. And to be honest, I really enjoyed the feedback we were doing before, where the feedback was a little bit more real time. Mm-hmm. We're not going to go back to that, though. We're going to do something a little bit more stuff you should know-ish. So I think I've mentioned on this podcast before, I really like the Stuff You Should Know podcast. If you don't listen to it, you should. They do a piece of listener email at the end of every episode. We are going to start doing that. And what we're going to do is each of us is going to pick a particular piece of listener feedback, input, email, It can be about anything, about any topic, about, you know, just a question, really anything. It doesn't have to tie to last week's topic.
Yeah, because sometimes we get really nice, really insightful emails that is hard to fit into these feedback episodes where we're going through topic by topic. And, you know, we try to do something at the end where we throw in wedding advice, but it's not always easy to make that happen.
Yep. So we figure if we each get to pick one, it means that we will be reading things more in real time so we can actually respond to people in real time. Because let's be honest, most of us as human beings don't do what we're supposed to do until there's a deadline and it's looming.
Also, it's tough when, you know, I don't want to accidentally mark something as read when I'm going to need to have that marked as unread to put together the show notes for these episodes. It's tricky.
Yep. So, and Fletcher's been, you've been reading all the feedback as well, all the emails and stuff. Yep. So it just gives us a way of each like picking one and saying, okay, we're going to own this one. It also helps on the cold reads so that, you know, we don't have to try to stumble through what people are saying. If we're just, we own one, we can paraphrase it so it makes sense to us, whoever's presenting it. Mm-hmm. And we'll do those at the end of each episode as opposed to the beginning. That way, if you're not interested in what people have to say, except for us, which totally understandable, it's our podcast. But but if you're not, you can say, all right, I'm going to tune out because now they're doing email. I don't think you will. I think that our inputs and feedbacks are pretty good. So I like them. So that's what we're going to do with our feedback changes. That's going to start.
We're great listeners.
Yes. We love our listeners. We will not do this. Actually, maybe we will. It sort of depends. If we have between now and our next episode. Nope, I'm lying. I'm going to lie completely. We will not do this in our next episode because we will not have any feedback for anything that we don't already have today. Due to scheduling, we are actually recording these two back to back. So we're recording this one on Monday and we're going to record the next episode on Tuesday.
I don't know. I might have an email I can look at. We'll see.
Oh, all right. Well, we might. We'll see.
Maybe.
Yeah, if there's things that slip through the cracks, maybe we will. But next episode is going to be on talking about industry disruptors. So this was Thomas's sort of a take on Thomas's question to the Covenant podcast that I'm stealing. We're just going to broaden it to a little bit more. We're going to talk about YouTube and Amazon and Kickstarter and all that stuff. So anyway, that is what we're going to do with feedback. And that is why we are not doing any giveaways anymore, because we're just going to incorporate those. The feedback threads and the input threads on BGG, we want those to keep going because we may pull things from there too. And I really love seeing those discussions there. I'm trying to be more involved with them. And sometimes you'll see me in spurts. I'll respond and then I'll go, you know, a week or two without responding. So I do read.
Yeah, when we're putting together these episodes, we go and pull. And I was commenting on things today that I don't see until I'm looking for it. And now if we're doing it every week, you know, it's going to make me be more active.
Yep.
Hopefully.
So we're looking forward to these changes. Sorry, Fletcher. I talked to Kitty about this yesterday, and then I figured, oh, I'll just tell you tomorrow when we record. So
then we had technical difficulties for 15 minutes and talked about nothing.
It's all good. All right. So that is the feedback changes. The other change, and this is probably just as big, is a Patreon change. So as of yesterday, as you hear this, I've gone through and I've changed the levels of Patreon and changed the rewards to Patreon a few weeks ago, but it looks probably a few months ago at this point. Basically put the kibosh on being able to do random, you know, kind of like drawing type random rewards on Patreon. So I can't officially provide those anymore, which is fine. Unofficially, I can do whatever I want. So unofficially, if I have your email address and I want to enter you into our contest, I'm going to do that. And that's exactly what I'm going to do. If I have your email address via Patreon or feedback or whatever, you will be entered in any of our future stuff. But I'm getting ahead of myself. First is changes to Patreon. We are going to set three levels in Patreon. So actually, there's technically four, but there's three that most people will see as a possible thing that they would do. The first one is a $2 level. At $2, you get all of our Patreon content and live feed access as soon as I figure out how to make Discord go through OBS. It's a complicated thing, but as soon as we're able to do live, we're going to. Now, I'm not going to guarantee that we're going to do live on every single episode. Sometimes scheduling just doesn't allow us to do that. But when we do a live feed, we will shoot out an email to our patrons, give you at least 24 hours notice saying, hey, we're going to do it at this time. Join us if you can. We, again, we probably won't do every single episode just because it's sometimes it doesn't work. So that's the $2. It's uncredited. So when we say the list of names at the end of the show, we don't want that list to get too long, but we definitely want to have that list. We enjoy saying the names and have fun doing that. But if you don't want to be on that, you just want to, you know, support us in a very silent way, then you can back at the $2 level. The $5 level is essentially the same as the $2 level, but you get credits. So this is where we'll say your name at the end. If you are a patron now, everyone is going to get everything that the $5 level is. So regardless of what your backing is right now, if you are a patron today, your credits are not going away. You are still at the end of the show. We love you. We appreciate you. That's not changing. But for future patrons, $5 will get you credits at the end of the show. Also, Kitty,
you will receive your official board game degree from me. We have had a couple requests. I threw this out on an episode that I was going to be awarding board game degrees. It will be available for $5 a month, patron members.
And how that works and what that is, I don't know yet.
It's going to be a certificate. You'll get it in the mail. I'll figure that out I need to.
Which is why we ask for your address when you're a patron. Yes. We're not going to send you spam or anything like that.
No.
We're not going to knock on your door saying, hey, play Terraforming Mars with me.
We are not organized enough to sell this for any sort of benefit. We are way too lazy to do that.
But it is handy so that we know when we want to send you free stuff.
We want to send you things.
We can do that. So that is the $5 level. And then we have the $20 level, which is just blows me away that anyone's willing to do this. But this is our friend of the show level. You know, currently, George, I think, is our reigning long term. Although I still think Emil may have slightly more weeks with him, even though Emil's not with us anymore. That sounds morbid. I don't think he's gone like that. But anyway, but Adam, the SGC, Thomas, you know, these are people that are the foundation of like the funding for the show. It's almost half of our funding comes from, you know, the five people that have that slot available. So there is one slot open. The friend of the show, essentially everyone knows you hear your name at the top of the show. You can email us and say, hey, I want you to do a topic on this, or, you know, basically your suggestions matter. And I may even find you on another podcast and answer your question, even though you didn't ask us. Like it means just a ton to us. And also, we'll probably do random other things. We've been known to do that in the past for our friends of the show. But that's the $20 level again. I don't think we can emphasize how much that just means a lot to us that you're willing to pay more for us than Netflix. And then there is another level on Patreon, which is the sponsor level. And this was $200, but I moved this to $100. And the way that this works, it's if you have a Kickstarter or a game you're promoting and you want us to talk about it, if you are at the sponsor level, we will give you kind of a 30-second to 60-second ad in the middle, or the beginning and the middle of the show. Basically, what we're trying to do is we want stuff that we believe in as well. So don't back at this level without emailing us first and saying, hey, this is what I would love for you to promote for me. If we don't believe in it, we don't really want to promote it. But we do want to give people an avenue of saying, hey, you know, for, you know, four episodes for $100, that's $25 an episode. It's a pretty decent return. We're more than happy to, you know, talk about something that you want us to talk about. And it could be a club or a convention or anything like that. Just let us know ahead of time. Those are limited to two.
Any sort of endeavor you are undertaking.
Yes. We're not going to bombard. So like I said, this is limited to two per episode, or two per month or whatever. So don't think we're going to be doing a whole bunch of ads. And these are very personal ads. Like we're not going to sell you a Blue Apron or anything like that. we would charge them a lot more. Okay. Finally, that means no more monthly giveaways. But we do want to do, I really enjoyed giving away games and stuff before. It was just the logistics of doing it monthly became so, it was just, there was a lot of stuff that made that difficult to do. So instead, we're going to do giveaways and they're going to be games and things again, but on a more special occasion type of thing. So what I'm going to do is announcing there are no more monthly giveaways. I'm going to announce we have a giveaway. And this is going to be tied to the new Patreon structure. So what I'm doing is Wanderer, the Cult of Barnacle Bay, has just fulfilled from Kickstarter. I just happened to have an extra copy. For some reason, I wanted to get two copies because they had Kickstarter extras and I wanted two sets of them so I could give away to our listeners. So everybody who is a patron puts any kind of input or feedback on BGG, emails us with any kind of input or feedback. This is how you enter. You just interact with us and you're automatically entered. If you, you know, you can basically interact and say, hey, you know, email us at feedback@tabletopgametalk.com. Say, hey, I just want to be entered in for the contest. I don't really have anything else to say. That's fine. And you're entered. Just so we know that you're around and active. As soon as we have, could you have something to add to that?
Are we still using the giveaways at Tabletop Team Talk email?
Yeah, we'll just do everything feedback. No, it's just easier. Feedback.
Yeah. Okay, I didn't say that.
Well, secret little back end, everything comes to the same address. Anything at tabletopgametalk.com comes to our address, but that word in the front
they get filtered.
Helps, yeah, helps us organize it. So, Wanderer, Cult of Barnacle Bay is our first one. We will do a drawing when we get 10 more patrons. So right now we have 55 patrons. When we are at 65 patrons, on that episode, we'll do a drawing. Or episode 140, whatever comes first. So this is episode 135. So we're giving about 5 weeks. We're hoping to bump the patron numbers up 10 people. And the faster we do that, the faster we do this drawing. And we go from there. International. This is another reason why I kind of went to the gift card things. If you're an international backer and you win, you do have the option of paying for shipping, which is almost ridiculous and guaranteed in many cases, or email me and we'll work something else out. You might, you know, decide to give it to somebody else, or, you know, maybe do a trade, and somehow we'll figure that out. So international, I'm not ruling you out. We'll just have to work out the best way of getting you a prize in that particular. All right. I think that's everything. Does that make sense?
I don't know. What about our up here?
Oh, right. I almost forgot. Patrons are the $2 level. So I jumped down. The $2 level, you are going to get access. Well, all levels. You're going to get access to Patreon exclusive content. So what does that mean? Well, one, we're sending out show notes, which isn't anything special. Trust me. As soon as you read them once, you're like, I understand.
I get that.
I get it. There's nothing amazing there. But a couple times a month, we are going to do side chat like episodes. And what that essentially means is we're just going to talk about something. And, you know, we may talk about Wingspan and what we liked. We just played it and what we liked about it. So we might have 15, 20 minutes of talking about Wingspan and throw that out there. The subjects and the descriptions will be very good, I guess. Descriptive. The descriptions will be descriptive so that you can understand or decide whether you want to listen to it or not. And it won't be in your podcast feed. You'll have to go to the Patreon app and then you can listen to it directly from there. But that'll give us a time to kind of talk to people on a more personal basis. We may also record things about our plans for what we are going to do and different things we plan on doing. We have some really cool stuff that are planned for the future, so you may hear it there first. Kitty and Fletcher don't know that I recorded the first 15 minutes where we were trying to figure out why Discord was broken.
No!
So, you know, we might get that out there. So there's a bunch of different things that we can put out there. They're going to be raw conversations. They're not going to be, like, edited, but they're just still going to sound pretty good. Likely, Fletcher and Kitty will be Discord sounding, but you guys sound good on Discord 99% of the time, so I don't think you'll even notice a difference there. And I think that's, and I already talked about the streaming, right?
No.
Yes.
I thought you did. Little bit.
I don't think so.
Well, we will stream sometimes and we'll, yeah, we did. We
definitely did. You did. Yes. We covered this.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
All right. That's 17 minutes of changes. Wow. This episode's really long.
I told you it was going to be.
Yeah. This was an important one.
It was important.
So
these are important changes.
Yep. And let us know what you think, especially if you're a patron, because your opinions matter. But be nice, because we are very, very fragile, and one negative comment will just have us walking away from this whole thing.
We need compliment sandwiches.
Yes. And by that, I mean compliment on top, bottom, and in the middle.
It's like a marshmallow fluff sandwich.
Exactly. I don't want any onions in my compliment sandwich. It's gross. Yuck. Just like Cards Against Humanity. Okay.
I love how much you say you don't dislike that game and then just can't help yourself.
it's a running joke at this point. As am I, a running joke. Okay, and on that
read note, the things.
You can follow us on Facebook at @TabletopGameTalkPodcast, Twitter, TabletopGame, TLK, Kitty is Awful Good Mom, Fletcher is Net Fletch, I am Game Master Chris. All of these links are in every copy of the show notes, so if you ever want to know, you just go to our website or scroll down on your podcatcher of choice, and you will see all of this stuff you can click on, including our Patreon link, which is TabletopGameTalk.com/Patreon, or you can go to Patreon and search for Tabletop Game Talk.
Tabletop Game Talk is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Thanks for listening, and remember, we love your feedback, so email us with comments or questions about today's topic at feedback@tabletopgametalk.com.
Finally, a huge thank you to our patrons. George Adam Harrison, the SGC, Thomas Achi Reddy, Jason Strong, Terrence Miltner, Steven Seitz, Michael Ohl, Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, C. Marie, Rudy Liu,
Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Stephen Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, Jennifer Engelbrecht, Justin Willard, Christopher Dong, Jason Marks, Jeremy Fisher, David Radke, Nick Quickstra, David Sellers, Jason Rodney, Michael Yanikowski, Miles Clark, Cindy Lum, Phil Schwartzel, Anne Reynolds,
Eric Hoffman, Adrian Dong, Christopher Vincent, Nate, Baz Flintham, Sean Peck, Eric Sealander, Mike Smith, Trevor Davis, Wesley Trailer, Tim Vernig, Chris Lowe, Joe Hoover, Timothy Gross, Glenn Cotter, Jesse Wolkoviak, Barry Peterson, Ben Gari, Emil Jewel Jacobson, Marina Stevens, Brady Miltner. Now he got his first name right.
Meltzer.
Brady Miltner, not Brady Miltner, and Gregory Huber. Until next week, keep playing games and having fun. All right, I think that's a new record for length.
I knew it was going to be a long episode.
And you're like, oh, you need to keep going, keep talking about stuff. I was like, no, I did my job.
Well,
so much feedback.
I didn't.
So much insightful feedback from our delightful listeners.
I love our listeners.
They're great.